Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. A lot of stuff to get into still here on the show as Orlando Brown has shown up to training camp. We'll see when he passes his physical and is out there on the practice field and all of that stuff and the conditioning. So he is there at training camp. Patrick Mahomes rolled his ankle this morning. There was a scare for about 4.5 minutes on Twitter and live on the air. But all good for Patrick Mahomes. Some texts that came in at the time. This text says that, hey, Josh, of course Mahomes has an ankle. Majority of people have ankles.
Didn't know my dad was listening.
There you go. That was the Herm Edwards though. He's got a little bit of an ankle. He's dealing with a leg right now. He's got a knee. Okay. Thanks.
I personally prefer that time. He's got a little groin. I'm more of a Romeo injury report guy personally. But.
Another text says, guys, relax. It's not a big deal. Signed, Adalberto Mondesi. Stop.
Don't do that.
Stop.
Come on.
Speaking of which, let's talk some Royals baseball. Okay. Craig Brown, Into the Fountains newsletter, intothefountains.substack.com, as the Royals do salvage a game there in New York. Craig Brown joining us here in the zone. Craig, what's up, man? How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, thank you. I've got two good ankles, so if Mr. Mahomes needs one,
that's right.
I'd be happy to give one, I suppose.
He does not want either of my ankles. A lot of bad basketball and rolling them and landing on feet and never actually rehabbing them and just going out and playing again. And I'll deal with it later on. Well, I'm 42 dealing with it now. So he does not want those. They will continue to roll. Craig Brown into the Fountains. The Royals didn't really continue to roll after going on that 22-20 stretch and then getting shut out and losing 3 of 4 to the Yankees. But, you know, Salvi's back. Let's start there. Salvador Perez has the surgery. We wondered how long he would be back or how long he would be out before he would be back and how long the Royals would if they would maybe take it a little more cautious with him this go-around. That was not the case. He returns 3 games, a couple of three-run home runs, 7 RBIs. Salvi just does Salvi things. He is he's unbelievable and is a big part of this offense and shows why he was, you know, most of the time the straw that stirred the drink.
You know, the dude just is in beast mode, like, 100% of the time. It's amazing. I mean, everything that I saw about that injury that he had said that it was going to take some time to not only heal, but to do like a rehabilitation program on it. And that, you know, I mean, you know, best case scenario might have been like, say, end of August. I mean, that's just like, you know, what these doctors are saying. And, you know, here Perez is coming back like almost a full month ahead of schedule. And, you know, he did fine in his, you know, minor league rehab stint, which was like, what, 2 games. And then he's, you know, out in New York bashing home runs. And it's I don't think it's a coincidence that last week they were missing Bobby Witt Jr. and Salvi out of the lineup. They got shut out 3 games in a row. Not a surprise. And, you know, Bobby Witt comes back. He, you know, scuffled a little bit, you know, over the weekend. But, you know, like you said, Salvi is the straw that stirs that offensive drink. And, you know, with him just being back in that lineup, it's not surprising then that they went on to score 15 runs over 3 games after getting shut out 3 games in a row. So, you know, the offense just looks better with him there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just the fact and that the guy can get back on the field so fast. I mean, you know, we say that he's superhuman, and he is, but let's also pay tribute to his work ethic, which is just off the charts.
Yeah. Visiting with Craig Brandon at thefountains.substack.com, and the trade deadline coming up tomorrow. We'll see who remains on the Royals after that, but with the trade deadline, with Benintendi being traded, Carlos Santana being traded, a couple of players that have been called up, Vinny Pasquantino, Nick Prado, injury to Bobby Witt, saw Michael Garcia, MJ Melendez when Cam Gallagher went down. And so we've seen these guys eventually called up and then stay around. What are you seeing from, and Bobby Witt up all year, these younger guys? It was I talked about at the beginning of the show that we were going to talk with you, and you brought up at End of the Fountains that that fifth inning where the younger guys, Pasquantino walk, a Prado or a MJ Melendez single, a Prado double, a Garcia double, and scoring those runs. And it was like these younger guys that are stepping up and making big plays and coming up with big at-bats there in Yankee Stadium. So as the season progresses, all of the focus has been getting to the trade deadline and then what happens after that. And I feel like starting Wednesday, really, I guess Tuesday night, but really Wednesday, is about what did they do, who did they trade, who did they trade for, and then who's up with the team the rest of the way, and what do these young guys look like leading into 2023?
Yeah, you know, really what I'd like to see is just kind of a consistent, let's say, defensive alignment for these guys. You know, let's have Prado at first. I know Melendez, you know, as a catcher isn't going to knock Salvi off that position. But, you know, Sal could use the rest. And, you know, so a little split of time behind the plate. And the rest of the time, you know, let's have Melendez, I suppose, out in the outfield, you know, because you got Pasquantino, who's going to be your designated hitter. But, you know, just, you know, some sort of consistency. I think that, you know, really what needs to happen is kind of what we've seen over the last, you know, few weeks, is that these guys need to be in the lineup every single day. They need to get the regular reps. That fifth inning was like a microcosm of what we've seen from these guys, the approach. And I think that, you know, they may have come to the organization as, you know, disciplined hitters, but I really think that hitting program that Alex Zumwalt, Drew Saylor, and the staff in the minor league levels have put together is, you know, really emphasized approach. And we're seeing that manifested at the major league level right now, that these guys fall behind 0-2, but they still battle. They fight off pitches that, you know, aren't necessarily strikes, but they're protecting the plate. You know, they're protecting the zone, and then they wait, and then they get their pitch. Or they just, you know, are able to lay off and you know, work that count, you know, jumping ahead to where, you know, again, that forces the pitcher to throw a favorable pitch, or, you know, they're taking their walks. I mean, Melendez just saw a ton of pitches this weekend. Prado yesterday saw, I think, six pitches in every at-bat, except for one when he saw five. You know, it's new for the Royals. We haven't really seen that in the past, you know, several years that Dayton Moore and J.J. Piccolo have been assembling these rosters. These are disciplined hitters, and as they improve, you would expect that the discipline will pay the dividends, which we would see in, you know, on base percentage, on slugging percentage. This is an exciting crop of young players.
And in theory, getting to a team's bullpen quicker if they're seeing more pitches,
yeah.
Like you talk
yeah.
Nick Prado and all the pitches that he saw, you know, in the game, visiting with Craig Brown. The defense one is, I mean, I don't know what to make of it. If it's just they're figuring it out and piecing things together until they get to the trade deadline, and then they can, after Tuesday, kind of go forward with what they feel like could be guys in the future. If Whit Merrifield's traded, as Michael Massey brought up, if Michael A. Taylor is traded, you know, is Bell in center, and just trying to figure those things out. But it's difficult to, you know, really believe a team can go and win a game and limit a team, no matter who's out there on the mound, unless you're Gerrit Cole and you're striking out, you know, 150 people. You've got a catcher in right field, a first baseman in left field, a first baseman at third base, and a DH playing first base. It's an interesting alignment defensively.
I mean, it's a roster loaded with first base DH types, and they're also rolling out there with basically three catchers, you know, with Cam Gallagher on the roster as well. You know, in the minor leagues, you got Michael Massey, down there. You've got Drew Waters, who's looking really good since he came over from Atlanta in that trade. But, you know, Massey's not on the 40-man. Rivera, you know, is in the minors as a third baseman, you know, maybe comes up and fills that hole, but that's not really the issue, you know. I mean, as, with all the first base DH types, it just feels like this, I don't know, man. I mean, every time I sit down and try and figure it out, I get lost. I'm like, you know, turning, it's like, you know, the rat in the maze, you know, you're hitting a dead end. Well, that, you know, that's okay. Whatever, that might work. It probably shouldn't, but okay. And then, you know, I mean, there's no cohesion to what they've assembled. It feels like it's, you know, you hope that with the trade deadline, you know, about, you know, 28 hours away, that they are going to make some moves to kind of break up that logjam a little bit, which means that you're looking at the veterans. You're looking at moving a Hunter Dozier, which I think is highly unlikely, but they should be exploring it anyway.
Yeah.
Moving, you know, even a Whit Merrifield to open up some space, or, you know, as you said, Michael A. Taylor, to open up the outfield space. The outfield picture could even get a little murkier, you know, depending on the health of Oliveras, who is currently on the injured list. So it just, you know, I mean, there's a lot of kind of round hole, square peg thing going on with this roster right now that that they really need to sort out over the next day, really, for the next couple of months.
If you're guessing right now, what's the future of MJ Melendez, or where is his future on this team? Is it right field, catcher, third base? You know, is where would you guess that they're going to put MJ Melendez, because Salvi ain't going anywhere?
Yeah, I mean, I would think that it, you know, it could be maybe 75-25 Perez behind the plate with MJ, you know, backing him up. But then, you know, yeah, they got to keep his bat in the lineup, and so, you know, maybe that ends up being in that right field spot. You know, I don't want to say that he can't play out there. He's looked okay at times. He's looked you know, a little shaky other times, but that's probably the future again. And again, you know, spelling him at DH a little bit. You know, I mean, which kind of goes against what I've just said, but I mean, that's where we are with this roster right now. There's no answer to really any question that you have. You can, you'll talk yourself in circles.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if there's going to be a trade sometime soon that it's going to be where they alleviate some of that and move some pieces around to not have a log jam and help out in another place that they are deficient and lacking of certain things. And you know what, if people feel like this is like 2012, and we'll see if that's the case, you know, going into 2012, into 2013, in that off season is when they made the trade for James Shields and Wade Davis, that they felt like they were there and younger guys coming up. So we'll see if that's this offseason or not. Trade deadline, who do you expect will be traded? Do they make another move before tomorrow at 5 o'clock?
I kind of broke down some names today at Into the Fountains, and as I was doing that, I'm thinking to myself, I don't know that they pulled the trigger on anything else. I think that they should. I think that they would be, you know, better off if they moved a player like Whit Merrifield. Finally, Michael A. Taylor, you know, has a little bit of value underneath him as he's performing, you know, at a high offensive level for him that he's never performed at. The defense is still strong in center and is signed through 2023 since the Royals extended him last September. So you know that control would make him attractive to teams, and that's the same kind of thing with Merrifield. He's under contract through 2023, with that option for 24, which I don't think would be picked up no matter what where he is. But you know, so you're looking at a couple of guys with some control. Then you know, look at the bullpen: Scott Barlow, Josh Stalmont, a couple of guys you know who have you know performed well for the team. But again, you know, I mean, the Royals have been, you know, somewhat adept at forming a bullpen. You know, the arms, you know, that they are able to kind of find, you know, on the cheap or through the draft. have, you know, helped the bullpen out a little bit. And there's always a premium on bullpen help at the trade deadline because any contender needs more arms. So, you know, I'm thinking that, that if the Royals are talking to a team about a Merrifield or a Taylor, it would be really smart for them to package a Barlow or a Staumont with a position player that they were looking to move, because that's only going to improve the return, because both those guys have plenty of years of control left, and would be a real benefit to add to a contending team's bullpen. So I think that, you know, if the Royals are serious about being transactional, there's a way to create a package with one or two teams that would net, you know, a decent enough return, a better return than what we saw for Benintendi from New York, where they pretty much chose quantity over quality, which isn't a bad route to go if you're going for the pitchers. But, you know, Benintendi is a rental. He's there for 2 months plus the postseason. You know, everyone else that we're talking about now is signed or under team control for several years. And so, you know, that's an opportunity to net yourself a decent prospect return at a time when teams are placing a high value on their prospects.
A couple of things from Mark Feinsand and his latest update and notebook of the trade deadline had mentioned Scott Barlow. He was going through the bullpen and different players that would be coveted by other teams. And Scott Barlow, who has team control through 2024, so you would get him this year and then two more years if a team is trading for him. Staumont one more year this year and then next year as well. And he talked to a National League executive because they were saying the price tag of all these different players is abnormally high because of the number of teams that are quote unquote still in contention and feel like they're still in contention. So teams are asking for a lot. The National League exec said, as Tuesday afternoon gets closer, you would have to think those price tags come down. If they don't, we'll either see some big overpays or a lot of players that seem like locks to be traded remaining on their current teams. It's interesting because I don't know which is which. I think the Royals in the past have asked for too much with Whit Merrifield, and they've said, sorry, we're not going to trade him then. I don't know if they're going to do the same thing, because quite frankly, there were a lot of people that felt like that trade was underwhelming for Andrew Benintendi, that maybe they took under market. And then it's like, well, you see a rental player, he doesn't hit the ball out of the yard, you know, these guys. And then you see the Mariners and Luis Castillo, and they've got three of the top four prospects from the Mariners organization that head to Cincinnati. So I don't know where this thing's going to shake out tomorrow. And then, Craig, you know, Jeff Passan says everybody's sort of in a holding pattern waiting to see what happens with Juan Soto. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe Juan Soto gets traded tomorrow at 3:00 and then everything goes crazy for the last 2 hours.
I don't know why Soto would be holding it up.
Agreed.
Honestly, because, I mean, the prospect return or the price tag is going to be astronomical, as it should be for Soto. But, I mean, there's only a handful of teams that can pay that kind of freight for that player. So,
and then I mean, pay the type of money that you would be paying the player.
Exactly. And so, you know, that's a limited market there. I don't know why that would be holding anything up. You know, something that was interesting just before I came on is that the Cubs and the Yankees have swung a trade. Scott Efros, a reliever for Chicago, who has 5 years of team control.
Wow.
You know, who's done really well this year for the Cubs out of the bullpen. He's striking out over 10 batters per nine, walking less than 2.5 per nine. You know, just a really, you know, good reliever. And, you know, he's going to New York in exchange for Hayden Wesneski, who is a starting pitcher who is the fourth ranked guy from Baseball America, who was a guy that, you know, I had kind of locked in on as like a potential Benintendi return. So, you know, when I'm looking at that for Benintendi, you know, obviously I shot a little too high, but the Cubs, you know, for a reliever with a lot of team control, get a really, you know,
top
quality
five prospect.
Pitching prospect.
Top five prospect for the Yankees. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, so you can look at that and you go, okay, that's the price for a reliever right now. So take a couple of years of team control off of a guy like Barlow, right? But Barlow has the track record in the majors, a little bit more established than the pitcher from Chicago. And so, you know, I mean, are you looking at something, you know, a little similar? You know, probably a little less, just given the team control. But still, you know, you're in that neighborhood, I would have to think. So, you know, we're looking at some elevated price tags for relievers, I think. And, you know, the Royals would do well to get involved. I think, you know, as you were saying, there's a lot of teams still in the mix. There's still even some teams deciding probably at this moment whether to buy or to sell. With that extra wild card, makes a big difference. And so, you know, I would think that the Royals would be able to play off. I think, you know, if I had to guess, we'll see, you know, some high price tags, you know, on some of these players, on actual trades that get executed rather than a lack of movement at the deadline.
Well, a big bullpen piece has just been moved as well. The Brewers and Padres have worked out a deal that Josh Hader has been traded to the Padres from the Brewers. So that's an interesting one.
Milwaukee doing there?
Yeah. The Yankees are giving up their top five prospect for a reliever, what are the Padres giving up for Hader? Maybe that's what happened. Maybe the Padres were like, we're just going to overpay. And Brewers are like, well, we can't say no to this. Everybody's available. If you blow us away, then, you know, we'll trade somebody. And maybe that's what they got. We'll see. But the Cubs have done that before. Last year, Javier Baez, you know, they threw in Trevor Williams with the Javier Baez deal. And Trevor Williams had another year of team control and was good for the Mets last year. He's got a 3 ERA this year for the Mets out of the bullpen. And because they threw him in there as well, they got, you know, the number top 20 pick in the 2020 draft and Pete, you know, Crow Armstrong, who was a top five prospect from the Mets, who's now the number 33 prospect in all of baseball for the Cubs. And it just sometimes bullpen depth and relievers get you a pretty good price tag. I mean, Josh Fields or I can't remember who it was that brought back Yordan Alvarez to the Astros. It was a trade deadline for a reliever, you know, that got Yordan Alvarez. Or maybe it was offseason. Either way, it was a reliever that brought back Yordan Alvarez. So you never really know what's going to happen with some of the bullpen pieces. So if the Royals, if bullpen arms are going for that, then I'm sorry. Love you, Barlow. But, you know, time to find a new residence somewhere.
It is an absolute excellent way to, you know, pump up the return. I mean, these arms are so volatile. You know, pitching, you know, as an art is just kind of, you know, I mean, these guys are walking a line every time that they go out there. So, you know, if you can spin a guy like that, you know, along with somebody to increase the return, like you were talking about in the Javi Baez deal, I mean, why wouldn't you? It makes a lot of sense, especially for a team that is in a clear rebuilding situation like the Royals.
Yeah, and Milwaukee, who's leading the Central by 3 games, has traded their star reliever, Josh Hader, to the Padres. So,
but the Brewers, so, you know, are turning up pitchers left and right. You know, I mean, they are a team with a really good pitching development pipeline. So they've got, you know, guys lined. They're not making that deal if they don't feel confident in the guys that are behind him in the bullpen. And you know, have to wait and see, you know, the kind of return. Ooh. But I would expect that it's outstanding return.
Here's the return. The return on Josh Hader is significant. They get left-handed closer Taylor Rogers from the Padres. They get pitching prospect Robert Gasser. They get Esturi Ruiz. And then also Denelson Lamette. Yeah, Esturi Ruiz, he's a name that comes up a lot because that was part of the Trevor Cahill deal. People talked about that being Strom. But Esturi Ruiz was a 17-year-old that they traded, and he is just mashing in the minors. He's come up and with the big leagues for a couple of weeks now, and maybe that's how you want to know why you trade Josh Hader? There you go. You get a closer back, you get a couple of pitching prospects, and you get a guy who was turning into a top 30 prospect in all of baseball in Esturi Ruiz, who is just mashing as a 21-year-old. So
wow, that is a heck of a return for them. I mean, yeah, of course you do it.
Right, that's the thing. It's like, we're not trading Josh Hader. Okay, we'll give you this. Still not going to do it. We'll give you this. I don't know. We'll throw in him. Okay, what are you going to do? Like, sorry, Josh. Enjoy San Diego. You know, it's going to be nicer there in the offseason than it is here. So They said bullpen arms, the price is abnormally high. And so far, the two deals that have been done today have brought back a top five prospect for a reliever and then a star reliever in Josh Hader that has brought back a significant return to the Brewers. Interesting. If that's the case, man, I 5:15 tomorrow, you know, and the news stops coming in and Barlow and Stallman are still royal. We'd love to hear what might have been out there for them.
I was going to say a couple hours ago, I'm like, come on, you know, what's up with this deadline? Nothing, you know, let's move. And now mm-hmm. I'm like, this has potential to be like the greatest trade deadline ever. So let's go.
Yep.
That's some fantastic stuff.
Passan also throwing in that the Padres didn't give up any of the main prospects they've been talking about in a myriad of other deals. C.J. Abrams, Robert Hassel III, James Wood, and Jackson Merrill all remain, as does Mackenzie Gore. The Padres could really pull off a Juan Soto and Josh Hader double. So that'd be interesting if that ended up happening for the Padres. So we'll see. That is the definition of going for it, taking all of your best prospects in your entire system that you've been building for a while and then turning that into some of the players they have. And if Juan Soto and Josh Hader are, you know, a double trade guys coming over, whew, that'd be really interesting. Craig Brown from End of the Fountains. Craig, we'll be watching and seeing what else is going to take place over the next, what is now, 28 hours? 28 and a half hours?
28, 29 like hours. 28, yeah,
28 and a half, something
there.
Like that.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. Craig, you're the man. Really appreciate it, sir.
Hey, thank you for having me on today. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. There's Craig Brown, Into the Fountains, intothefountains.substack.com. So as we're talking, as you mentioned, Cubs and Yankees pulling off a trade where the Yankees sent over a player that when Benintendi was traded, people thought, are they going to get him back for Benintendi? Top five pitching prospect, top five prospect for the Yankees. One of their top pitching prospects overall. That was not the case. The Royals went quantity over quality. And the Cubs went one for one, and they got the Yankees' top five prospect. Their best pitching prospect is heading to the Cubs for a reliever, and some really good players heading to the Brewers for Josh Hader. So you hear that, it's just like they're leading the division by three run or by three games. What are you doing there? And then you see the return, and Milwaukee's like, I mean, what? Do you Hader's not having the best of years, you know? He's still got 59 Ks in 34 innings. He's got a 4.5 ERA, but still 29 saves, only 12 walks to his 59 strikeouts in 34 innings. Pretty good player. And then you send back, let me see. So, yeah, they still got a closer back. I mean, Taylor Rogers has 28 saves this year with a 4.4 ERA. He's only got 48 strikeouts in 41 innings, so he's not the strikeout guy that Josh Hader is. But you're getting a closer back that's less of strikeouts, seems to be as effective with some really good prospects and throwing in Esturi Ruiz, who so far in his young career, in 14 games, is batting .222, getting on base at .222, slugging .333 for a .556 OPS. Six hits, a double, a triple, and a stolen base. So there you go. A guy that we've talked about a lot because he was just destroying minor leagues this year for the Padres, and a throw-in in that Royals Trevor Cahill deal that sent Strom to the Padres and also him. So there you go. Some movement starting to happen on the trade deadline. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll get into some Chiefs again. Frank Clark, want to hear some clips from him for the weekend. And Deshaun Watson's penalty is 6-game suspension, and we'll see if the NFL is going to appeal. The NFLPA will not appeal. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Talked a lot of Royals today.
Sorry.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, so a lot of stuff going on today. day before the trade deadline in Major League Baseball. Some NFL news out there. A scare there at training camp. So a lot of stuff to talk about. If you're just joining us, what has happened today? Orlando Brown has showed up to training camp in St. Joe. He is going through his conditioning tests, physical, things like that. And we'll see when he is out there on the practice field. Was not practicing today with the team. First padded practice for the Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes rolled his ankle for about 3.5/4/5 minutes. There was some concern. He went to the tent, did not go to the tent, then was going to go in the tent, then left. And then he was limping, and then finally he got taken to the tent, then came out, was holding his helmet, still with a limp, and then got back into quarterback drills before the practice was over. So all good there in St. Joe. Deshaun Watson has been suspended for the first six games of the season, and he remains eligible to practice and play through the preseason games, but will miss the first six games of the year. The NFLPA has already said that they will not appeal this decision. The NFL has put out a statement simply saying that the NFLPA and the NFL now have the right to appeal in writing within the next 3 days. The NFL is now gathering information and looking over everything to then make their decision. I can't imagine that they would not appeal. We'll see what happens with the NFL and if Roger Goodell is going to get involved from that standpoint. And a huge trade in Major League Baseball. Josh Hader, all-star closer, heading from Milwaukee, who has a three-game lead on the Central, and heading to the Padres, while the Padres send back their closer in Taylor Rogers and a few prospects as well, including Estory Ruiz heading to the Brewers. So it's starting. We'll see how crazy it gets, but it's starting. There have been some prospects that have been moved in the last couple of days. Padres to the Brewers got a pretty good haul, and the Cincinnati Reds for Luis Castillo from the Mariners got a pretty good haul, which people are talking about sort of changing the calculus of some of these trades that may take place in the asking price for some others. Kind of like in the NBA. When Rudy Gobert gets that, then it's like, well, that kind of changes things with Kevin Durant. When Luis Castillo, who's a damn fine player, but he brings that back that, and then Josh Hader brings back this, and then the Cubs have one of their bullpen guys who's got a number of years of team control that brings back the Yankees' top five prospect for just the bullpen piece, not Benintendi in a bullpen piece, just the bullpen piece. I love you, Barlow. And the man bun, loved it, Stalmont. But I would really like to see you get a chance to play in the postseason. I'm thinking of you. I'd really like to see you go and play in the postseason, both of you. Barlow, great conversation that didn't get recorded a couple of Thursdays ago. It was awesome. And it would be the irony of life in that one of the things I was looking forward to talking to Barlow about was that he, you know, he and his wife lived in a camper over the summer during the games, during the season. They would stay in the camper in Arkansas in the off season. Then they would drive to Arizona for spring training. Then they would drive to Kansas City, and that's where they lived. And so asked him about it, like, so, you know, this, you guys still doing that? He goes, oh no, we decided to buy a house this year. Life can sometimes come at you fast. That he'd been living in a camper the last 3 years with his wife. This is the year he decides, well, let's settle down and buy a house in Kansas City. And then, of course, that would be the irony of then being traded to wherever. But I hope for his sake he's playing in the postseason this year.
Here's a game I love to make Matt Derrick play. He hates it. I'm going to make you play it now.
Right. I hate it too already.
What's the percentage chance that you believe Scott Barlow is not on the Kansas City Royals a minute after the trade deadline?
The percentage chance he's not.
I'm going to say the percentage chance that the Royals do trade Scott Barlow before the deadline. I have my number locked in.
8.10%.
You just make it 8.1. You know, it's that's the station.
It's 8.10. Yeah.
You think there's a less than 10% chance that it happens?
Here's the thing.
Oh, man.
I give it a Royals historical with this front office less than 10% chance of happening.
What if a good team had
the caveat of a plus or minus It can only be minus 10, but a plus 41% based on J.J. Piccolo is now the actual GM and not Dayton Moore. That could take it to 51% chance that he's not on the Royals, that he is traded, rather than my going off of years past where the Royals don't trade players with team control, and certainly a bullpen piece that has 23 and 24 still of team control in Scott Barlow. If they feel like they're going to compete next year and then really be ready to go in 24, Barlow could be a part of your bullpen. Would you do that? The Royals of 2021 to 2007 would be a no, that's not happening. JJ doing something different? I don't know. All I can go off of is what we've seen so far.
So just like Matt, absolutely refusing to play the game by the rules that I have imposed upon you, totally good. Skirting the system.
Good. I gave you two different numbers.
I know, but that's the whole point, though. The thing that is stressful here is how hard it is to divorce what they would have done historically over the last 15 years and what they objectively should do and maybe should have done last year.
Well,
the Brewers would have traded Scott Barlow last year at this point. Like, they would have been a year ahead on this one. He's got 2 years of control after this. It's hard to sell things that still have value. I understand that. I do. It sucks that he would buy a house this offseason and then get traded today. But the market's looking pretty. The stove's looking pretty hot.
You know,
it's looking toasty out there for some good relievers, which Scott Barlow is one of. He's not quite 30 yet. 2 more years of control. He could help anybody except for the Royals. He could help anybody in October except for teams who aren't in the playoffs.
Here's what I'm wondering and hoping is that
I like Scott Barlow.
Is that the Royals drafting a lot of college guys, okay? And the Royals trading for 3 pitchers from the Yankee system that people look at and go, well, this guy might be a really good bullpen. Beckway, could he be a starter? If not, boy, what a good bullpen piece. TJ Sikkema, could he stick as a starter? He's got that bulldog mentality in him, and he's a strikeout. He goes right at guys. Could he stick as a starter? Certainly he could, but man, coming out of the bullpen, that lefty and him throwing strikes and just pounding the strike zone, boy, what a good reliever he would be. And then Champlain, whatever it might be, sort of the same thing. That, you know, 6'5", bigger guy that can't seem to put it all together, even at USC, but with the Yankees as well. They trade Santana for Wyatt Mills. You know, so maybe as they're collecting arms that they're looking at refilling the bullpen because they plan on moving Barlow and Stallmont. There's my wishful thinking that maybe is J.J. Piccolo's bigger plan, that he does have an idea of, okay, we're bringing these guys back. That's why we're going quantity over quality, is because we're getting a lot of different guys throwing some numbers at it. Hopefully we get a starter or two or just even one. And if not, we feel like we got some strike throwers with some strikeout stuff that can be in the bullpen, and we can develop those guys into having another good bullpen, and we can find another closer. And one of the reasons why they wanted Dylan Coleman to come back in the Trevor Rosenthal trade is because he can throw 100 miles an hour, and he's got some bleep you in him on the mound, which has that sort of closer mentality. If he could figure out how to throw strikes, you know, that whole thing, that, you know, he's one of the guys that people have talked about that maybe he could be a back end of the bullpen guy. So they're collecting those players. It's just a matter of actually seeing them go out and perform and succeed. You know, you've seen that with Barlow, but you're not doing it this year, and you're not going to do it next year, and then Stallmont's a free agent, and then you'd have 1 year of Barlow in 2024.
And here's what I think happens here.
You found the cough button.
I found the cough button, but the phlegm I've been finding has been even more unpleasant than the feelings this trade deadline's making me feel.
Uh-huh.
Let me just clear that out. Like, I wish they'd clear out these players with value. No, here's what I think.
That whole thing was a metaphor.
It was all a bit. Here's what I think. I've been drinking coffee and tea all day today, and I'm still just, I don't know, I'm phlegmy. Here's what probably happens. Is they stand right now and they look around and say, oh, we got 2 years of Scott Barlow left. You know, Dayton Moore's got in his mind palace, he closes his eyes and he looks, he thinks about the future. And he sees in 2024, Scott Barlow's out there for the 9th inning of the play-in wild card game. And he goes, oh, you know what, boy, would be great to have those flowing locks out there for a 9th inning whenever we're already down 4-3 for some reason. And and we're trying to just hold them to keep it a 1-run deficit before we get to the bottom of the 9th. Cool. All right. I get it. I'm sure you're envisioning that. Which means that next year you're going to say, oh, well, you know, by the trade deadline, if we hold Barlow right now, either next year we'll finally move him for real, or maybe we are a little ahead of schedule. Okay, so they'll keep him through the deadline next year, and this team's going to win 78 games and miss the playoffs. And then going into 2024, it's going to be, oh man, you know what? This year we're going to do it. We're going to scratch the surface of the wild card spot. Let's go get him, guys. And then Scott Barlow pitches a fine ninth inning. They lose 4-3 because they can't score in the bottom of the inning. And then he walks away in free agency. Like, this is the future that I am afraid to envision.
Yeah.
And I wish the Royals would operate just a little more out of fear of guys losing their value, because they have just watched their investments tank, or the value of their portfolio tank with these older guys that should have been moved already. This is unless there's something we're not seeing, this is the time for Scott Barlow, with the reliever market being the thing that we have just continued to learn that it is even today. This just seems like the time for him and for Staumont.
Let's hope it's the
case.
I'm
afraid it's not.
We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling. Maybe this is the time for Frank Clark this year. We'll see. Frank Clark spoke with the media on Saturday. He was very candid, revealing it was a fascinating press conference. We've heard one clip already about him talking about losing weight, cutting out red meat, cutting out liquor, not drinking that anymore. He was having the gastrointestinal issues, and that turns out to be a connection with the liquor that he was drinking. So he's cut that out, his offseason, and how important he took it to be a professional and all of that stuff. So we've heard from that. On the other side of the break, we'll hear from him. He had a conversation with Andy Reid, how hard it was last year for him going through all the off-the-field stuff, and then his view on George Karlaftis. He had a lot of fun things to say about George Karlaftis. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
More sand in my ass and stuff like that.
On Sports Radio 810.
That's hot in here. Holy
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We'll keep track of the trades if they are taking place in Major League Baseball. Tomorrow, 5 o'clock Central Time, is when the trade deadline takes place. Frank Clark talked on Saturday. He is a slimmer, what looks to be quicker Frank Clark. Although a year ago we heard about, you know, Frank Clark and different things he was planning on doing, and then when he hurt his hamstring, then getting back and playing, it was okay, now he's got his strength back and all of that stuff. But maybe this is different this year. Frank Clark was asked about last year and the off the field stuff, and just how hard it was for him going through all of that while trying to play football.
It was hard as hell, you know, when you're going through all the stuff I was going through, you know, it's hard, you know, it's life, but you know, I put that on myself. You know, so at the end of the day, it's like, you know, when you put that on yourself, you got to deal with it. You know, you got to be a stand-up. I'm a stand-up guy. You know, I don't run from nothing. Everything that I've been through, y'all know everything I've been through. You know, everything I've went through, I stand up to it. You know, I stand up, face it as a man. You know, you have to. That's the only way you grow from anything. That's the only way you can experience it. You know, the only way I can tell my young dudes, the only way I can tell my kids, the only way I can tell my little brothers right from wrong is if I've been through it. You know, I'm the top dog in my family. So everything everybody's been through, I've been through it harder than everybody. And I'm fine with that because I'm the example. When you're the example, you're going to go through everything first. So then everybody behind you, they follow suit and know not to do it.
So hopefully last year with the incidents that took place, the stuff off the field, dealing with all of those things, an early injury, showing up, as he said, he was overweight. He had a gut. We heard that. He talked about that and losing weight and looking at the film from last year, how slow he was, and you know, that's not who he needs to be as a player, and that's why he took the offseason so much more seriously than he has in years past, and professional and all of those things. So in the offseason, the question was whether or not Frank Clark would return, and I certainly didn't think he was going to be on the Chiefs this year. I thought they would cut him, move on. Instead, they restructured the deal. They keep him for $1 million more than what they would have taken in a dead cap hit anyway. He talks about a conversation that he had with Andy Reid in the offseason, sort of a get your bleep together convo.
It was flat out. He was like, I know what type of player you are. You know what type of player you are. You didn't show that this season. Flat out. You know what I'm saying? I understand that. Man, Coach Reid, we very real. You know, Coach Reid from East Los Angeles. I'm from South Central. It's the same thing. You know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, we're going to keep it real with each other. We West Coast boys. We LA boys. So at the end of the day, I understand. I relate. We relate fine. You know, perfectly fine with each other. We both had to work hard to get, you know, wasn't nothing easy in life. So at the end of the day, you know, I come in last year, I'm going through what I'm going through, but at the end of the day, I still have a job to do. And I didn't do my job like I should have in my opinion, to my capability. You know, in some people's opinion, that's average. That's average year. You know, that's I watch the average players get 5 sacks or whatever in a year. But to my, you know, standard, that's not good enough. And obviously to my coaches. And I appreciate him for that, for holding me to that standard.
A player that shows up the next year and says, last year I wasn't taking it as serious as I should. I had other things that were off the field, distractions that were my own doing, that I did that. I put that on myself to do that. And now this offseason, in a get your bleep together offseason, looking back and seeing what was a below average year, substandard, and 4 or 5 sacks, that's not good enough. Watching the tape last year, being embarrassed, seeing a gut, as he said, and then going into this offseason and saying, all right, it's time to get everything back in order. It sounds great. Like, that's the thing. Like, I hope it's true, because a Frank Clark resurgence and a bounce back year from a couple of years being, you know, off the grid, it felt like, on the field at times, would be just mammoth for this defense if that were the case. So I'm hoping it's true, and clips in practice so far show that he does look pretty damn fast. So is that going to translate to then production on the field? We'll see.
It kind of goes back to Andy Reid using the word endurance today, that he has the endurance so far. Now, I don't know how much you can endure during one padded practice so far. That's going to be something that Frank Clark just has to prove it for the remainder of camp and into the season. He has to prove it to Andy Reid and to us and to himself. It's going to be something that you can't answer in week 1 or 2 or 3. What's Frank Clark's season look like by week 8? We'll have a lot better idea, obviously.
So let's hear from George Karloftis, or excuse me, Travis Kelce. Excuse me. Frank Clark.
That makes sense.
We heard from Travis Kelce today. Mm-hmm. Let's hear from Frank Clark on Saturday talking about his goals for this year, and then gets into a conversation about George Karloftis, which was pretty fun.
To be the best I can be, you know, best teammate I can be. Help these young guys. We got some young guys in. I got George, you know, who's a first-round guy who's got to be ready to play. So at the end of the day, you know, everything, part of my, you know, part of practice and part of things I'm doing in practice is helping him understand the system faster. You know, as a rookie, I know how tough it can be coming in when you got all these different things going on. You got people, you know, your family, you got friends, they all on your back and stuff like that. And for a guy like George, you know, he Big Ten guy, you know, I'm a Michigan guy, so, you know, we got that Big Ten bond. And, you know, I just want to see him be successful. You know, when he lines up outside, on the other side of me, you know, inside, wherever he lines up, I just want to see him be successful at the end of the day.
Can you, with George, after practice, just can you describe what that's been like and what you're sort of working with him?
Yeah, George is dope. George is a dope rookie. You know, one of the more, you know, he listens, you know, and I honestly like him. He's a favorite for me. Early, you know, as one of my favorite rookies ever, you know, because he listens and he wants to know, he wants to be good, he wants to figure it out. He understands, like, it's a different game. He understands a different twitch in the NFL. It's a whole different, you got to understand things. I was teaching him today. He asked the question about getting off the ball. Me notice I fly off the ball. He like, bro, what are you looking at? I explained to him like some different keys. I can't speak on them obviously, but I explained to him some different keys, and he came back to me like, I was just sitting there like zoned out looking at the sky. I just came off the field 5 plays straight. I'm like, you know, I'm chilling looking at the sky, zoned out, like ended practice. He come running over to me like, bro. He like, bro, I did it. I'm like, what, dude? Like, he scared me. He like, bro, I did it. I did what you told me to do. I was like, oh, you know, cool. All right, you know, good stuff, bro. You know what I'm saying? But it's just the fact that, you know, that he came over so excited, bro. He came over so excited. And it was just like, you know, going to my 8th year, you know, as a watching a rookie be so, it was the most excited I've seen a rookie. You know, basically his ability to retain the knowledge that I was telling him, and for him to go do it and for him to feel it and see the success from it. I was happy, you know, and enjoy his fruits. So at the end of the day, that's how I feel about George.
So look, I mean, not knowing what all goes on in training camps across the league, I don't know how many first-round draft pick defensive ends would come in and do those things and act like he's sort of undrafted free agent or like a little league. I did it! I did what you told me to do, Frank. Hey, coach, I did it. I did that thing. Which is awesome. And Frank Clark saying he's my favorite rookie I've been around. Enthusiastic, all of that stuff.
Really fun.
Which makes sense why look, Frank Clark talked about the investment in the offseason, taking everything more seriously, doing what he was doing with his body, nutrition, losing the weight. This is going to be a big year for him. It's got to be all of those things. And he's also been staying after practice, working with the young defensive ends, working with George Karlaftis. I mean, those things to me matter. I mean, that sticks out. Again today after practice, Frank Clark, George Karlaftis, working. Mick Schaefer next.